You got a minute?
You must be part of my hangover.
And I hope the wax in your ears didn't stop you from hearing, pal.
I'll remember your face.
I'll try to forget yours.
What about the bartender?
I let him have it over the head with a peanut machine. Run along, darling, before I fracture your spine.
Is the gun loaded?
You want to find out?
No, I'm happy you're just guessing.
You don't have to say anything and you don't have to do anything.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
If you're the police, where are your badges?
I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
All right, Carly, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I see you guys are out and about doing some selling on the street there. Not panhandling folks, they're legitimately selling stuff. Like, they created these amazing little different thingies, which Carly's about to tell us about, and they're selling them to the general public. What's going on over there?
And drove me fucking bonkers. Well, she's made all these little resin things, which are amazing. They're fabulous. She's got skulls, teddy, handle holders, you name it. We go down there to sell the stuff, and she goes, I've got an entire basket. So then we have to drive all the way back to go and get the rest of the shit.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, that's a challenge. I get it. But how did it go? Like, what all were you guys trying to, what were you selling?
Like, so she was selling resin teddies, resin skulls. We made some earrings out of guitar picks, which we were trying to flog. Nobody was buying them, but we were trying to flog them. Pretty cool. And there was a medieval stand.
A medieval so gun. Just,
yeah, medieval stand. So as soon as they started reenacting anything, she just fucked off over there.
And left you? Left you to sell?
Yeah. Like, well, this is your stall.
Typical
but now,
teenager.
Never mind. She's gone. She's gone. They've got a spear. She's gone.
Well, that's cool. All right. So there was reenactments, and you guys were selling stuff, and you forgot a basket and had to go back. How long were you guys out there?
5 hours.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is, Jason. 5 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Well, 5 hours you got to spend with your daughter that you didn't actually get to spend with your daughter because she ran off to...
Because she was too busy reenacting 1866. all I got was little kids from nuts again. We have something for £1? No. It's says £2.
Right?
Oh, I got £1 and a button. No, it's not free's advert. It's £2.
So, did you guys sell anything worthwhile? Like,
sold loads. To be fair, her stall was the only one that people were going to.
Really?
But bearing in mind, bearing in mind, she was competing with a lovely lady who did some fantastic paintwork. However, her cheapest paintwork was £55 in free. That's a lot of money.
All right.
There was a stall with some secondhand baby clothes and a stall with some teddy bears.
Okay.
That had been bought from supermarket. So.
All right. Well, I mean, so she had some higher end competition, I guess you could say, but she was knocking it out of the park, huh?
Yeah, she did well. The hair stall was the only stall that had people around it.
That's cool.
So
all right.
She did good.
Nice. Congrats, Lily.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
She actually spoke to people, which she never normally does.
Nice.
So.
That's cool.
High five to Lily.
Yeah. Yeah. She came out of her shell, made some money, met some people, and did some reenactments.
She did haggling better than you did. So.
Oh, I don't haggle. I suck at haggling. That's not a me thing. That's a Shawnee thing. Shawnee will haggle till she you know, won't even buy it, like, or sell it, whatever it is. I'm not
like
a
me. I will haggle and go, hey, it'd be like 50 feet. I don't even want it anymore. I never wanted it to begin with. And then I go to the street. I really fucking want it.
No, I'm just like, if I'm selling something, I'll like price it like, you know, $10 or something. So I'm like, oh, can I get it for $5? Sure. Yeah. Want it for $1? Cool. Just happy they're buying something.
That's what Lily's like. She went, Bill came over to me and she went, what did she have them winning the poo earrings? I said, did you? And she went, yeah, I let her have them for 50p. Lily, you priced them at £3, Will. She went, yeah, but she was so happy.
Well, I mean, that's good. You know, she's being introduced to the bargaining thing, and she's, you know, she's got empathy.
Don't
right?
worry. A dad went over after that conversation, and he was in charge of haggling. So.
Nice. Well, so I heard about this. You were telling me to like watch this new show on what was it? Was it Amazon Prime?
Show. I tell you to watch a lot.
Yes. Is it Spy? Is that what it is?
Netflix.
Nesquik?
No, Netflix.
Oh, Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, are you sure it wasn't Prime? Was there something on Prime you told me to watch? I can't remember.
I tell you forever. To watch a load of stuff on Prime.
Okay, yeah, because I was looking forever for this show on Prime and I couldn't find it. And I'm like, I don't even like Prime anyways. I wish this was on Netflix. And now it's on Netflix. So this just gives me a better opportunity to go search for it on Netflix. But anyway, what is it? We didn't have a chance to talk. What was it about? I don't even know what it was that I was searching for. So I could have been like, I could end up watching like Spy versus Spy or something, which is completely
different.
When I
told you to watch The Spy, and you kept getting really confused about, there's nothing called Spider.
Well,
no, it's The Spy.
Well, if I thought it was called The Spider, then I definitely would have avoided it anyway. I don't like spiders, folks.
Me neither.
Yeah. But it is my, it's one of my logos for my production company, Digital Shadow Films, is a ugly Black Widow spider. I don't know why. Yep, exactly. All right, so it's called The Spy. See, I wasn't even putting the part spy in there. I was just typing in spy, and like a thousand things would come up, but I don't think any of them were the correct one.
You're going to get 100 comedy films that are not funny.
Okay, is it a comedy film or is it not a comedy film?
It's not a comedy film. It is not generally not a comedy film, people.
Okay.
If you type in spy, you are going to get a lot of comedy films.
Yes. Okay.
You need to put the in. Very important.
What is the movie again? Tell me about it.
So it's not a movie. It's
not a movie.
Series.
No, oh, shit. I was all fucked up because I'm looking for a movie.
Works.
The wrong title on the wrong platform. Jesus.
Thank okay, God. Go I'm amazed at what you may have watched by accident.
Well, nothing. I watched nothing.
It's like a six-part series.
Okay.
So they're doing like BBC-style six-part series.
Yeah. And so, yeah, is it a limited series or is it like, will it be an ongoing thing?
No, it's just a one-off.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're just like extended movies. It's a six-hour movie, basically, is what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the UK, it would be like a three-part showing. Ooh. At least Sunday, Monday. Ooh.
Yeah.
But on Netflix, it's just a normal day.
Right. They just did the same thing with the new Walking Dead show, the Rick and Michonne one. I don't know if you ever watched that, but I think it's called The Ones Who Live or something like that. It's not very good, but I don't know. I don't think the show's been good since like season 3 anyway, but I still watch it. I don't know why. It's weird. It's a weird love-hate addiction thing. I'm not sure. It annoys the crap out of me and I'm always mad by the end of an episode, but I still watch it.
It's really bad because I never really got into The Walking Dead and I know everybody else on the planet did, but I was like...
That's okay. I'm the same thing with Seinfeld. I never got into Seinfeld. I hated it. Or Friends.
No, I didn't, but I love Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I never got into that either.
Wow.
I know. I'm a terrible person. Horrible.
We were all awful. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. All right. So The Spy on Netflix.
Spy.
The Spy.
The Spy.
This Spy?
The
The, T-H-E, right? The Spy.
The Spy with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Sacha Baron Cohen in a serious movie?
Sorry, what? How did you say Sasha?
Sasha?
Sasha.
I feel like we're saying the same word. Sasha. Isn't that what I'm saying?
You're saying Sasha and you're going Sasha.
Sasha. That's how you say it. Isn't it? Am I wrong? Sasha?
Sasha.
Sasha. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Sasha?
Sounds like saying
a cloth or something. Take a look. Feel my Sasha.
I mean, I don't know what cloth you have, but okay.
I don't know. Like, touch my silk. Don't listen to me. I don't know.
It does kind of sound exquisite. I'll give you that when you say it. When I say it, it's like Sasha.
Sasha. I feel like we need to send him an email or, I don't know, a messenger pigeon and ask him how to pronounce it. Shouldn't we know this? The guy is like world famous. Like, I figure that I've probably heard somebody say his name properly before, and I'm just not intelligent enough to retain that memory nugget in my brain hole.
My husband used to work with somebody called Sasha, and they used to just say Sasha. So that's what I'm going with.
I feel like you're saying the same damn thing. Like, you say Sasha and then Sasha, and you say it again. It's the same word. Are you saying it differently? And I'm not hearing the nuance. Because you're British, and I don't pick up the Britness often, but that could be it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I feel like this is really bad.
You might want to just butchering everything.
Butchering? Okay. I need a translator. Is there an AI translator here? Let me see if I can find a British to American AI translation here. It says no. Nobody translates British speak. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Is he British? I don't know. Is this a British show?
He is British. It's not a British show, but he is British.
Oh, okay, cool.
We're claiming him. Yeah, we're claiming him.
Yeah, I mean, he plays so many different characters. Wait, are you joking, or is he actually British?
He's British. I'm not lying to you.
Okay, because I worked with this guy once who's Armenian, and like everything in the world was Armenian, he would tell me. Like, he would just be like, oh, you know, that's made by an Armenian guy. And I'm like, what? That's French toast. Armenians didn't make French toast. And so, like, I started like doubting everything because I was told everything is made by an Armenian. So, no, are you sure?
Promise you, okay. He is from Hammersmith.
I had no idea. He plays so many different characters and different accents and different, like, I want to say nationality kind of things. I would never know. I would never know. You know?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
He did that one movie with was it Brothers? Was it Mark Strong or not Mark Strong? What's
his name? Brothers Grimm.
Brothers Grimm. Oh, is that what it was?
Brothers Grimm or Brothers Gimli?
Yeah, that was hilarious. I don't know how it did, but man, I laughed my ass off on that movie. That's so funny.
But, no, for me and Lily watched The Dictator.
Okay, yeah, I saw that one too.
I did actually laugh backside of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny too. I feel like when he does like the Borat kind of things, like I watch those things and like it makes me so uncomfortable because I picture myself as, this is going to be hard to explain, as like him as an actor trying to like do this comedy bit with this person that doesn't know what's happening and just keeping a straight face.
You just give in after the first thing, you'd be like,
I would fail so epically. Like, there's no way. And then I'm always worried, like, well, that dude finds out, he's going to punch you in the face and you're going to probably go to the hospital. Like, I would be so worried about stuff like that, or just being like, I don't know, I have this general like embarrassment thing for myself. There's no way I could pull that stuff off. So I give him mad props for that kind of stuff. You know, it's not the same sort of comedy as like, what do you call it, Jackass or something, where it's like they're just hurting themselves.
That isn't funny. They fireworks.
Well, yeah, I've never actually seen one of them. I've seen the TV show back in the day, but it's like it's a different kind of
That's a lot of
beast.
Holes. That's all I'm gonna say.
But it's a different kind of beast where you're like standing in front of a person who doesn't know what is happening, and. You're I'm assuming it's improv. He must have like some sort of like written, semi-written script ish, but then most of it's probably improv because you got to stay on your toes because you have no idea what the other person's going to say, kind of thing. And to be able to, two lines anyway,
times a million.
Yeah, but you can't break character or it ruins the whole thing, right? And he never.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he does, and it's just edited out. I don't know, but the way it's done, it just seems so brilliant because you can't, like, it never seems like it's an impossibility that he can break character is what it seems like when you're watching it. So it's a very interesting and scary comedy to me.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it.
The reason why I said to you that you have to watch The Spy is
the
because
Spy.
If you've watched, have you watched him as Ali G?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to college a lot during that time, so I didn't like. It was like on my radar because everybody was watching it, but I never had the time to because I was always like either working or in college.
I hate Ali G.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Full disclosure, I hate Ali G. Not right. Because Ali G is bad, but because I fucking hate every single person that watched Ali G that then spent 10 years of my life going, Mario Kasha, at me. I even street used to go, me Julie.
So I have no idea what those terms mean because I didn't watch it, but... So you hate it by proxy because it was so popular, people wanted to be that and like wouldn't leave you out of it.
It was like oversaturated. So when you walk into a room, someone goes, Bria Cash, that's not exactly the thing that you meant. Oh, you're not getting it. Fuck off. So I hated it for that reason.
Yeah, so for years, like, let me educate you.
whenever he came on the TV, and he did some amazing things, but whenever he came on the TV, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm just waiting for a street to say a catchphrase. Oh, wait, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, here we go. There it
are
is.
Are you having a laugh? Are you having a laugh?
Honestly, I swear to God, when I popped out Lily, he went, boy, you cash it. That's what you say after you've, like, birthed a human.
Yeah. Have you?
I loathed Ali G for years. And then when we all, I watched The Spy because my husband went, Booyah Kasha, there he is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, he's not doing a serious role. It's not happening. Oh my lordy. It's happening.
Well, did you ever watch, like, it reminded me of that show Extras when you were talking about catchphrases. Did you ever watch that? Was that popular over there, or is it just popular here in America?
With popular hair as well.
Okay. As I thought that was, I loved that show. But anyway, yeah, so.
I liked it, but again, the problem with the UK is when somebody's successful, they get oversaturated everywhere. So Ricky Gervais is just, you turn on channel 1, 2, 3, 4, it's Ricky Gervais. And it's just in your brain. You're like, oh my God, give me a break.
Yeah, I don't see that as a bad thing, but I get it.
Well, it's not, but it's a shame because then you rediscover people, say 10, 20 years later when you should have done it at the time. But because at the time you were like, oh my God, get out of my face.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, it's the same thing over here.
We don't have any people that are successful. So when someone's successful, it's like boom, 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 boom.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing here, though. It's like, you know, I don't know. Like, anybody who gets any sort of, like, notoriety very quickly, it just everywhere is oversaturated. And then it either falls off or it becomes, like, a joke or it just gets, you know, beaten to death by the media and, you know, that sort of thing. But, yeah, I think it's just, it's pretty common everywhere. And then something like Ali G was super, super popular at the time, you know.
And it, to be fair, looking back on it, I've actually started rewatching it, and it's incredibly clever, and it's incredibly, like, the satire in it is fantastic. But at the time, when all you have is teenage boys going, Booyah Kasha, you don't get it.
No.
And I think that's kind of the beauty of, like, that kind of creating those kind of characters, is that they stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because years later, you go back and go, okay, I get what he was doing.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah. So, all right. So the spy on Netflix, I'll have to watch it because now I know where to find it and what it is. Also, who's in it, which I didn't recall who's, you know, why you're even telling me that.
Sasha.
Yeah, I got it. Sasha.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. He's going to either hate me or hate you. I'm not sure.
I'm hoping it should.
Well,
because I'm going to say that I think that he should have really have been credited with two roles in that series, because realistically, he plays two roles.
Okay. Well, just don't send him.
And he plays them very, very well.
Just don't send him an email to ask him how to pronounce his name properly. We don't want him to hear this ever, because, you know, we just don't need more people hating us. That's the thing. Or maybe it's just you hate me and I hate you. It's not everybody else. I don't know.
Need a mediator. Maybe that be faster.
Mediator? Oh, yeah. Maybe. That could work.
People of Twitter. Maybe they could figure it out.
Would it be him or would it be one of his characters? Mm. Maybe Ali G would mediate.
Interesting.
I don't know. All right. So, hey, you know what? I did watch an actual movie for this podcast, which I know is amazing because I found it, and I don't normally like watching movies on YouTube, but this movie was the only place that I could find it, and I wouldn't even look there if you hadn't told me it was on YouTube, but it was the only place that I could find it besides like buying a DVD, which I wasn't sure if I liked the movie, so sometimes I won't buy it, and it wasn't super cheap or anything like that. So I watched it on YouTube, which I generally don't like to do because it's usually like terrible quality and all that kind of stuff. But this one actually wasn't bad. It looked like it was kind of like a an up-resed version or something like that, or maybe a remastered from mid-2000s, or I'm not really sure what. But it wasn't a terrible quality, and the sound was pretty decent. But before we get into the movie, we do have a drink for tonight. Now, this drink, there isn't something specific in this film in terms of like a drink to match it to. So this is really just a drink that pairs with the mood and the sort of complexity of the story and the feel of it as a noir film. Because it's not exactly a noir film, but it does have a lot of parts, a lot of noir aspects to it. And except, you know, I do have a small pet peeve in terms of it being noir, which we'll get to, and that's sort of like happens at the end of the film.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, no. Uh-oh. But yeah, we'll get there. But right now, like, our drink tonight is called the Midnight Recovery. Right?
What?
And, yeah. And it's to pair the intense drama and gritty undertones of this film, because it can be fairly intense. And who knew what this man's pursuit could be? So I don't even know how to describe it. Tunnel vision is what he has.
He was very focused.
Very focused. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And there's a few points in the movie where I'm just like, what? No, man. No, that is the wrong choice. That is also the wrong choice. You should not be doing that. There's something wrong with this guy. So that's where I was at for most of the movie with him. And the other thing was, is like, I haven't experienced a lot of Peter Sellers' films. I know him primarily from The Pink Panther, which I love.
Oh,
right?
I knew you were going to say that. And I knew that was going to infuriate me so much.
I'm so sorry. I really am. But I mean, that's like that's what was kind of mainstream over here as far as he goes in America,
get
right?
The
but
here's the and thing. Then we will upbush him because that infuriates me a lot.
Okay. Well, here's the thing though, that was sort of like coincidental but also interesting to me. Is like, so I'm shooting this movie right now, and I was trying to come up with a style of film score for it, and I've been talking to the composer quite a bit about it, and I really wanted to do this sort of spy jazz score, but with a sci-fi horror feel, right? Which I know is like damn near impossible. I did a lot of research trying to figure out other films that did something similar, and my first sort of like thought process of it was the score for Pink Panther, because it has that sort of jazzy kind of spy, you know, bass and piano kind of thing to it, which I really love. It's a classical kind of classic score. And so I started using that as temp music in the edit, which I thought worked really well. And then I came across, like, the new Ghostbusters film came out, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Let me go back to the original Ghostbusters and listen to that score, because that film is comedy, horror, sci-fi, supernatural. It's got all these things in it as well that this film does. And I was like, oh, this is very similar. And it also has a similar kind of feel to, like, the jazz style of, like, Pink Panther, but it has more of, like, the supernatural, like, sci-fi feel too. So I started using pieces of that as well. But anyways, and then you brought up, like, a Peter Sellers movie, and I was like, oh, that's crazy, because just 2 weeks ago I was pulling, you know, tracks from the Pink Panther score and throwing it into a film I'm editing. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I think we just
Yeah, it's Kismet or something. You know, it's just one of those things. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Back to the drink. I get sidetracked quite a bit. I'm really sorry, folks. I know everybody is, like, thirsty. So let's get back to the Midnight Recovery. All right. And this is really just a drink that's going to match the aesthetic of this film. Keep in mind that this film has got a really intense kind of dramatic story that I think takes a
certain...
It reminds me of Falling Down. Do you remember that movie with Michael Douglas falling down?
No! It's just lighten up down now.
Yeah, it has that sort of, like, this one man's kind of tunnel vision obsession kind of thing. And it really felt like that the feel of that film. And so this drink it gives you sort of that comparison to that. So anyways, let's get into the ingredients of this drink. This drink, the Midnight Recovery, is 2 ounces of bourbon, a 1/2 ounce of Amaro, which I've never had that before, and I don't even know what it is. Preferably...
We have the own here.
Do you? I guess there's a known brand, Averna. So this will be interesting to me.
We have other brands, but yeah, I know that.
Okay. 1/2 ounce of coffee liqueur, which is awesome. I love that. 2 dashes of Ignostra bitters. 1 dash of orange bitters. Orange peel for garnish. Sasha, do you bring the garnish? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
And ice. We need ice.
He does not bring the garnish.
It's garnish. All right. Instructions. We need instructions to make a drink, right? All right, so chill the glass. And I know that this is a thing that a lot of people don't understand. Chilling a glass, why don't you just putting ice in it anyways? Well, it's different, though, because ice melts and dilutes the drink, right? I think Street would know that. You guys owned a bar, right?
Oh, yes. He's very upset when ice goes in his bar.
Yeah, and then also, if you do put ice in the glass and you don't want it diluted, right, you have to stir it a certain way. It's a real tricky kind of wrist stir thing, which I got to give props to mixologists because, I mean, you know, it's a technique. So anyway, this drink calls for a chilled glass, and in a mixing glass filled with ice, you combine the bourbon, Amaro, coffee liqueur, agnostic bitters, orange bitters, and you stir it well for about 30 seconds. You strain it into the chilled glass, and then you garnish it with the twist, the orange peel. And well, actually, what you would want to do with this one is you want to actually twist it over the drink to get the oils and whatnot into the drink. I think it's kind of the same thing as, like, using the bitters, like the orange bitters kind of thing. But there's nothing like, I think, in my opinion, like the orange peel, like the fresh kind of, like, spritz of it. I don't know. But anyway, over the top of the glass, and then you put your little orange peel in there for garnish, and you have your Midnight Recovery, which hopefully, you know, you'll need some kind of thing to recover the next morning after you drink this, because it is 2 ounces of bourbon. That's a strong drink, right?
Yeah.
So I think that this drink goes pretty well with tonight's movie. And without going any further into what it is, you already know it's a Peter Sellers film. You already know it's got some noir stuff into it. And you know there's a few things that I don't like about it. And then Carly doesn't like me about certain things that I don't remember what it is, but she has a problem with me, as usual. So we'll get into that in a few minutes after you guys watch the trailer for tonight's film.
So much, Mr. Meadows.
It's a great pleasure. Great pleasure. 10 gallons. Chow to account, Cliff.
Thank you.
Why don't you come in?
When are you getting out of here?
You tell me, and then we'll both know.
I told you any time. I know I'm not supposed to come around here, Mr. Meadows, but something's happened.
Well, you're a big boy, Tommy. You're a working man. Gotta use your own judgment sometimes, eh? Business, Jackie, out. Now then, Tommy, what's this something that's happened?
Well, a fella came round to Victory last night. Oh, right, crummy was. Then Freddie comes round and he said he'd seen him yakking to Alfie. You know, that old codger that sells the papers outside the George. Well, we went round to Alfie's and after a bit of an up and a down, he admits this fellow was the owner of that new angler I stole.
So what?
So we done Alfie.
I thought you were a big boy.
But Alfie was...
I thought I told you never to lift anything within 5 miles around here. Don't you ever learn? Just don't bloody care. You see, they never learn. They all think they know better than I do. But you've only got to look at them and look at me, haven't you? You see, I've got a legitimate business here, Tommy. I've got nearly 200 account customers, and I've got twice as much cash on the side. Why? Because I've learnt that money makes money, Tommy boy. I know how to handle people, you see.
All right. That was the trailer for tonight's film, Never Let Go. The 1960, I would say, crime drama? Maybe noir?
Yeah.
Film co-starring Peter Sellers. Now, I was going to bring this up a minute ago. I know Peter Sellers primarily from Pink Panther. So when I was watching this film, granted, when we go to sleep at night, we turn our contrast on our TV down, so our brightness down on the TV, so it's kind of dark, and we sleep to, like, I mean, don't judge me, but crime shows. And so I had forgot to turn the brightness back up on the screen before I started watching the film, so it was super dark. And I was like, wow, this is really dark and gritty, like, not realizing that the brightness wasn't correct on the TV. Until about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes into it, my wife is like, hey, is the brightness not on? And I was like, oh, shit. So we fixed that. But I had a hard time figuring out who Peter Sellers was playing in the film. Because I figured he would be the lead character, and I'm like, I don't know if that really is. I don't think that really looks like him from my. But I'm again like, all these characters are much younger than, you know, the time that I remember him from Pink Panther and whatnot. So I had to look it up and make sure who it was, and he what the heck, Jesus, I can't remember his character's name in his Midview or Meadows or?
I know. Meadows.
Meadows. Okay, yeah. And then I was like thinking, like, Jesus, he's playing a real bastard in this movie. I was like, this isn't the guy that I know of. So I don't know if he's done a whole lot of work playing those types of characters, but he was a real jerk in this film. And he did it well, which not surprised me that he could do it, but just that I'm not used to seeing him in that kind of role. So it was really sort of like a trippy thing for me. I thought that was pretty interesting. But
you might not know it out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't know why you let me talk so long or so much. You know, you hit the mute button and then just do your thing. Because
I've been going and listening to you talking about Peter Sellers and not knowing who he was.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, I know who he is, but I think it's that time period, and also having my TV in darkness and, you know, me being stupid, there's a combination, right? It's a combination of that. I'd say a comedy of errors, but it wasn't funny. And neither is this. Yeah, in a nutshell, let's do that. Let's do Carly's super famous, in a nutshell, synopsis.
And now it's time for Carly's super famous, in a nutshell, synopsis.
The first one is, don't own a half-decent car in the UK.
Or you won't.
Well, that's it. That's why I don't. The second one is, falling down, John Wick style.
Ah, awesome. So we were on the same page with that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I love it.
That is so, it's, yeah. That's amazing when that happens. It doesn't happen often. We're usually fighting and arguing, and Carly normally wins, but it's great when we're on the same page. Yeah, it really, it had, and I didn't realize that until this morning talking with you, like how it made me feel. Like, Falling Down is a very powerful film, especially at that time. And I think it still holds over today, holds up today. And this film really made me feel the same sort of way. It's like, because you think about it, it's like, so folks, this movie basically is about a man who works at a cosmetic company, and he comes out to drive home and his car's been stolen. So it's his, you know, it's his
like his lifeline, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's his story about just trying to get his car back. You know, the cops aren't helping, the locals aren't helping. You know, so he's kind of using his, I wouldn't say charm, because it's not really his charm that's getting him anywhere. It's more about his dogged sort of tunnel vision. Yeah, that's getting him places, and it's causing him a lot of extra grief as well. And he's so fixated on getting this car back because he thinks it'll solve all of his problems. And his problems basically are that he has this sales job where he has to make appointments and he's late all the time. And to him, it's because he doesn't have a car to get there. And there's new blood coming in that have cars and are younger and better for whatever reason. It's a classic sort of ageism sort of
Can
thing
I
in the workforce.
Can I just say as well, I'm so happy that he threw that filing cabinet at that fucking asshole guy.
You know,
when he threw that arm, I thought, fucking yeah.
Right, yeah. You know, it's one of those
what
things too, because it's like...
bastard.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing though, is like, it's... You want to do that because you feel like crap. But at the same time, this guy is just hustling. He's just doing his thing. He's not actually doing anything wrong to this guy, you know, other
no,
than just being
so
better.
Mommy. He's so mommy when he's at Capcom. Oh, look, oh, my self-talk.
Yeah. I absolutely, I can't stand people like that either. But the thing is that, like, that's sort of society. Like, we push that onto people, right? We make people want to have that sort of cockiness because we tell them it's a great trait and say, oh, you know, be a hustler, go get it, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's hard to, like, it's very easy, I guess, in a way, to be in the other character's shoes and, like, be affected by that. And yeah, throw that briefcase right at his head, you know? But at the same time, this guy didn't actually do anything wrong. You know, maybe it's not the guy you're going to go out to drinks with, but it was one of those things where it's like, ah, you know, that's one of those things you just want to do, but you don't actually do because you're going to get arrested. You know, it's the same thing as like when he goes to the car dealership and breaks in. It's like, oh, dude, what are you doing? No, that's look there. What are you? Don't do that. You know?
Nah. Yeah.
And that's where I was feeling like the whole way, it, very much like Falling Down. It's like, yes, I feel like vindication is in order here, but everything that you're doing is getting you deeper and deeper, and that's not good, right? And they both have that sort of juxtaposition of the family background, right? And in this film, he is, you know, so fixated on getting his car back, he's losing his family at the same time. And the multiple children that pop up in the film, that's never really explained. One minute he's got a boy, then oh, there's a daughter, and then oh, here's a baby in the background crying. It's like there's three children apparently. Yeah, I thought that was pretty hilarious. But then, like, I think they were just adding to the issues, you know, like, oh, he's got another kid. Oh, there's another kid, you know? And she tells him point blank. It's like, hey, you're losing everything if you go do this. He's like, yeah, but I got to do it. It's just like, no, just step back inside, close the door. You know, you don't got, nope. Mm-mm. No. And it's all, you know what this movie really is? This is an advertisement for Geico. That's what this movie is. It's an advertisement for State Farm or AAA or whoever your car insurance companies are over there in the UK, because that's what this whole movie is about. Had you insured your car, you would not be in this situation, right?
I mean, you still probably would, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, because they don't want to pay out, of course, but they always make you feel like, oh, you know, like State Farm, where you're a good neighbor or whatever it is, you know, like we'll always be there for you, but there never are, right? And that's the thing, especially back then, like, you know, insurance sales was like a big deal and marketing and, you know, we're in that time period of Mad Men and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I felt like this movie was, remember that FBI movie we watched where it was like just FBI propaganda? That's what I feel like this kind of was for car insurance.
Sell your car. Sell your car or you'll be sorry.
Right.
I do have to say though.
Do you want to end up breaking into a chop shop? No. Go ahead, yeah.
But do you want to face the assailant? Like,
mm-hmm.
You know that bit though when his wife like so passively aggressively tells him off?
Oh, yeah.
And she goes, I'll eat later. No, sorry, he said, I'll eat later. I just thought, if that's her saying that to him, that would be like, I'm on hunger strike. I'm on hunger strike, and you'll find out later that I'm on hunger strike.
Right.
The way that he goes, I'll eat later. I really wanted him to come back and be like, no, no, you've made some beans, but I'm not fucking eating them.
Yeah, you know, I really did like their dynamic because she didn't hold back in telling him. And even sometimes where I'm like, Jesus Christ, that was harsh. Why did you say that? But it's not that it was wrong.
Yeah, but for the first part of the film, she's very much like, I completely understand. I'm here for you. Even when he says, I didn't insure the car, she goes, okay. I mean, if that was me, you didn't insure the car. Are you fucking, what planet are you on? What realm of reality do you live in? That would be a whole month-long argument. So, Street leaves his pants out. Well, you didn't fucking insure the car either. Don't I think pretty, you know, pretty nice about that. She was like, okay, no problem. You've done this. I'll sort it.
So before we go any further, we need to have a Brit speak 101 class here. Did you say Street leaves his pants out?
No, that's like underpants. Trousers.
Like his underwear?
Yeah.
Okay, what did that mean though? Like, what do you...
You feel like his underpants on the floor in the living room.
Yeah.
And I go, there's a washing basket for that shit.
Oh.
And he goes, well, I'm tired. Well, you're tired, but you didn't insure the car anyway. So.
I don't know.
That's how it links back.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah. Okay. See, I need like one of those like crime boards that cops have to connect like all the little pieces to understand.
Why these crime boards fall apart is because they don't understand women.
Yeah,
we remember Gotham 20 years ago. So a crime board will be nothing because they'll go, oh, we're doing it all in a tangible line. Here's the timeline. Not off. They get your timeline. We're talking about 5 years ago when you did this on a Sunday.
Like a complicated crime board where there's so many strings up there and different colors leading to all different kinds of places. You have no idea what's going on.
You need color timeline. So you need color for what happened in this decade, in that decade. Like, no.
And an assistant to explain it to you.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I really liked the wife, and that was Peter Sellers' wife too, that was playing that character. I thought she was really good. And I think the point where they first go to the Meadows car sales place and he is left outside and decides to break in is where I'm just like, all right, this is noir because this guy's making some really dumb decisions and this is all going to end super bad. I mean, he's going to jail, right? Like, he's either going to get beat up really bad. He's going to jail. Like, something's going to happen. He got beat up, which is fine. But I really thought it was going to turn super dark at that point. But it did. It kept going that route, but it kept getting, you know, worse and worse. He just kept doing more stupid things as we, you know, keep going along. And like, the cops are like, hey, leave me, you know, stay out of this. Let me deal with it. And he's like, no, I can deal with it better. I'll get my car back. But I'm like, you're not getting your car back. Not like this. Nope. You know, even though he ends up being like kind of pivotal in that happening, they probably would have got his car back anyway, because they were onto him for a lot of things, you know. But I think what he ultimately ended up doing was kind of destroying the psyche of this Meadows guy, Peter Sellers' character, in sort of the same way he was kind of being destroyed over his car, right? So Meadows' whole world is falling apart. He's, you know, losing his girl, which was already happening before, but now it's like tenfold. He's going to lose his car sales company. He's going to be implicated in all of these, you know, other things. His henchmen are like losing trust in him. You know, the chop shop people don't like him. Like, everything is like really falling apart. The more manic and crazy that he gets over this guy that just won't stop showing up. And it's sort of the same thing with our main character, with like not being able to find his car. It just gets more and more manic and crazy as time goes on. So there was a very interesting parallel between the two characters, because they were very similar people. It almost had this sort of like good versus evil aspect to it, but neither of them were really good or evil in a way, you know?
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that I really liked about it. I thought it was pretty interesting.
I really like the irony of it. Like, I love the fact that after his car's been stolen, he has to get on a bus. And on the back of the bus, as an advertisement, is Dunlop tires.
Right. I saw that, yeah.
I was like, hysterical. Oh.
Yeah.
That's like, hysterical to me. I think the irony is quite funny.
Yeah. And you know that was on purpose. That's not an accident.
Yeah.
That's not the advertisement that was just on the city bus at the time.
No, no, 100%. That is very, very fucking clever to do that.
It was. Yeah. And, you know, we should have had a friend of mine, Bret Hart, on this show, because he knows the director's family. Like, he is friends with of the family. Yeah. And he even wrote, I think, like a passage, and there was a book that came out about the director, and I think he wrote a piece in it, I think about Inferno or one of his movies. I can't remember which one it was. But yeah, so it would have been he would have been a good choice to get on here. But I didn't really realize who directed this film until this morning, and looking at all that.
Well done, Jason.
Yeah.
Can I just say as well, when he sat on his turtle, what little fucking bastard.
Oh, the turtle? Yeah.
Was horrendous. Yeah, I love Peter Sellers, yeah. But when he put his on that turtle, oh man, I hope you get bad.
Yeah, that was awful. I felt that one too, because we have a turtle. You know, not a little mini turtle, but we have a turtle. And it's just like, oh, that would piss me off. What the fuck? Yeah.
Oh.
No, there's a few things that they had him do in this movie.
He was horrible in this film. He was sadistic.
Yeah, I even felt like...
That's different, like, I think. He was not like, oh, I'm going to punch you in the face and do this, that, and the other. He was sadistic.
Yeah.
Like, when he's on his turtles and shit like that, and... the cigarette thing, when he had the cigarette on the vinyl record player, and he went, oh, pick for me, and then slammed his fucking hand in it.
No,
you know,
I think
what
that...
really struck me as well, though, what really like got me was the overuse of people's names.
Oh, when yeah.
Did you notice that when he was going Jackie?
No,
Alfie,
but I do.
Alfie. That's the retail thing, that is, because when you work in retail and you have a name badge on and someone goes, Carly, Chloe, Chloe. You go, you're trying to play your power play because you've read my name badge. You think that you can intimidate me because you know my name. And it always ends up being that they make a complaint because they know people's names. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was doing. He's the original Karen.
Well, I mean, you could ask the customer what their name is and be like, I know your name too.
But we don't.
No, but yeah, you know, I noticed that in, I think the most well-known aspect of that, I think, is from Lost Boys. They say Michael in that like a bazillion times in that film.
Yeah.
And
like,
it's
like a power thing. Like, I know your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I think if you haven't been in that situation like that, you wouldn't realize. You just think, oh, for God's sake, saying Jackie. But if you're in that situation, you know why that's there.
Yeah, and I think most people at some point in their life.
It's kind of like subconscious. I know you. I know you. I know you. I know you. And they repeat the name over and over again.
Yeah. I think most people have been in that situation, like in their younger careers working retail, or even in later careers, whatever it is, you know, like that retail accumulates for most of the jobs in the world. Because we're consumers, you know. So I think there's a lot of that out there where a lot of people can relate to that kind of bullshit, unfortunately. But yeah, they did a lot of interesting things like that in this film that really did make his character sadistic. And I was wondering, like, how did this? There's certain things where I was like, oh, that passed the ratings board. But then I'm like, okay, wait, this is a British film. Did they have ratings like that there, like America
did?
Yeah,
but
very harsh.
Apparently, this was very unwell received because of swearing and the violence.
Interesting. Yeah, because it was very like there. Some of the stuff like to his girlfriend, like I can't remember her name, but
okay.
Yeah, there's a few things in there that are just like, whoa, that's a little, whoa, okay. I'm surprised to see that in this movie, like this old of a film, like 1960 or whatever. But then again, I'm thinking, okay, wait a second. This is 1960. So this movie actually is a very, very strong transition from 50s culture into 60s culture from a lot of different aspects. From the music track, the score in the film, to the womanizing aspects, to the criminal aspects in it, to the even the camera work. I don't know if you noticed that, but they like even the camera work, there's a little bit more shallow depth of field on some shots and different camera angles we didn't normally see in some of the more 50s and 40s style films. There was quite a bit in this film that seemed to me to be a very strong transitional film language from the 50s into the 60s. I found that super interesting.
It reminds me a little bit of Point Break. Point Blank.
Oh, Point Blank. A little bit, yeah. And I think that's...
Yeah, that we watched Lee Marvin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a little bit later, but it definitely... You can feel that it's similar to the 50s, but also now that the 60s had already been passed for us and looking back, we can totally see those things. At the time, it would have been something completely new, I think.
Wait, we're fighting forward.
Yeah, it would have been a different kind of experience. You know, for us, it's very easy to be like, oh, that kind of has a 60s vibe here or there, but also a little bit of 50s here or there too. So it's a very interesting, and it's the first film that I think that we have watched that I think is super pivotal in that transition and it being made in 1960. Say that again?
Also as well, with the fact of casting Peter Sellers as a absolute sadistic bastard. Like, that is not a thing that... This is kind of like prototype for casting against type.
Right, yeah. And I think that was great for the time. You know, and even me watching it, like knowing him from certain things, specific things, that was very out of the blue for me. But man, did he nail it. Like, he nailed it, you know. So that was very cool. Very
cool. Oh, my God. He was very imposing, did you not think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, he was so big and tall, and apparently he wore extra clothing to make himself bigger.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. That's very cool.
he was very powerful without actually having to be violent.
Yeah.
To begin with. Obviously, he was violent at the end. But to begin with, he was very powerful without actually... Like, he was telling them a story, and then all of a sudden, bam, your fucking fingers are in the vinyl record.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he definitely
just
had...
Like, have a nice day, see you later, just, you know, be safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had tact, evil tact, but it was there. Well, all right, Carly, we're at that time to give this film a rating, I think. Do you want to go? Should we flip for it? Do you have a coin?
Yeah, you flip. Yeah, no.
You don't have a coin?
No.
Virtual coin in your head. All right, let's flip. Ready? One, right. Two, three. What'd you get?
Tails.
Tails? I got tails too. Damn it.
Tails.
All right, you can go first. I'll let you go.
I'm psychic powers. So I'm going to give this a 9.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, 9 out of 10.
Cool.
Why?
Tell us why.
The only reason I didn't give it a 10 out of 10 is because at the end, when they were fighting, they were literally smashing 7 bells of crap out of each other. And the only thing that hurt him was a car door. I mean, he's been thrown into wall, he's been punched, and the only thing that hurts him is a car door shutting on his arm.
Maybe it broke.
Well, you know what happened to him beforehand?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's a movie.
I really enjoyed seeing Peter Sellers cast against Pike.
Yeah, I agree.
I think
with
it's
that.
A shame to think what else he could have done.
Yeah.
Yanni. I do think he steals the show. I don't like it when people go, oh, there's a big actor as a co-star, put them on the front of the poster. But in this circumstance, I think, yeah, put him on the front of the poster because actually he stole the show.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But I think that's the thing. It's like when, especially having him, like, he's a lead, a co-lead, co-star, you know, but the main lead, I think, because of his character and his obsession and desperation in the film, it really opened up the path for Sellers' character to shine in that way.
We should not take anything away from the lead character because he was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Todd was brilliant, and I think they were incredibly well together, kind of be like polar opposite.
Yeah.
You think it's always... Comedy and tragedy is so close together. And when comedians can be chameleons, that's when you get something really special. And I think the only downfall to this film is that Peter Sellers ended up stealing the show for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, fair point. Fair point. All right. 9 out of 10, Jens. And just a refresher for you folks at home, we don't do stars. All right. We do gin bottles, because that's the one thing that we do here on the show is we drink and we say things. All right.
Yep. So I'm going to be in a coma.
You are a little gin bottle.
Send me flowers.
Airplane bottles. Take it easy, Carly. And also a refresher, I hate gin and Carly loves gin. But that's where we're at.
So the podcast is already uneven.
No, you need that perfect conflicting, juxtaposing, you know, things in order to make it good, right? All right, so 9 out of 10. And so I'm going to give this movie an 8.
I'm impressed.
I really liked a lot about it. There's a couple things I didn't like, which knocked it down quite a bit, because I think that they're rather important, especially looking at this through the lens of a noir film. So with this film, you definitely have our lead character, John Cummings, has this moral ambiguity that he's, you know, I wouldn't say struggling with, because he doesn't really seem to have a problem with it, right? He's trying to be a good family man, having a job, doing these things. He tells himself that he needs to get the car back in order to do good for his family and to hold his job down, all that kind of stuff. But he's doing everything wrong in order to actually make that happen, and getting himself in more and more hot water as he goes along. And he does that by his moral ambiguity and doing things like breaking into the dealership and things like that, right?
Yeah, he does make some very stupid decisions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But then again, he's desperate in his mind, though.
Right, which is great for a noir film, because that's kind of, you know, that's a main staple of a noir film, is moral ambiguity. So we've got that. We've got the crime and the corruption, the seedy underworld of the city. There's a lot of stylistic elements in this film. You know, whether it's the dramatic lighting, a lot of the close-ups, and, you know, things like that. Some really nice camera work as well in this film. The psychological, like, conflicts of the characters, it's very juxtaposed between the two leads, and I really love that about it. They're sort of playing down the same path, which is fun. They're just on opposite sides of the spectrum, right? And also just the negative outlook of the world, you know, even from both sides of those characters, you know. However, one of the main issues that I have with this film, and in terms of noir, is the end of this movie. He comes home and he should have lost everything.
She comes back in the door. Yeah.
But she's there and all is right in the world, right? And that bothered me so much. When he's sitting there before she walks in the room, I'm like, oh, okay, this is awesome. This is a good, dark movie, right? This works as a noir. And then she comes in and it's just like, no. Like, it really made me dislike that ending. Like, I wish I could just cut. Like, it's good. It's a good ending. Like, it's a good, happy ending, sort of, you know, as happy as it could be. Right, and I'm sure that's what Hollywood was going for, or not Hollywood, but Britainland would is going for at the time. And I really think that they should not have done that, and it would have made this feel like a 100% like a noir film. That right there, yeah, really ruined it for me. So that's that right there took, not him getting his arm slammed in the door or any of that kind of stuff, but like that right there, like, knocked it down two bottles of gin for me. Because I really feel like if it had just ended right before she came into the room, it would have been perfectly fine. And I really love the title of the movie, Never Let Go, because I went into this not reading a synopsis. So when we get to this point where it's like, is this really about his car? Is this whole movie really about him just trying to get his car back? And I get the reference you made with the John Wick thing and the dog and the, like, being, you know, having tunnel vision, all that kind of stuff. Like, I get that. But I'm like, holy fuck, this guy's insane. Like, just yeah, deal with the $20 a month that you got to pay the car company, and like, or don't pay it. You know, whatever.
Whoa, I mean, credit bureaus in, were they? When you're desperate, desperate times call for desperate measures.
I know, but that's what makes it great. Like, that's why we're watching the show. Like, I always tell people, why do they do that? Why, well, if they didn't do that, then there wouldn't be a movie, right? So it's like, I love that. That's why I'm watching it, to see his crazy, you know, his brand of crazy, tunnel vision, desperation, moral ambiguity, just like everything that he's doing that he shouldn't be doing over a car. While he's losing his wife and his kids, while he's losing his job and his money, while he's losing everything else around him, you know, he's after a car that he's only had for a week, you know, whatever it is. It's like, come on, yeah. It's crazy. And I think that they did that well, but that ending ruined it for me, as far as that goes. So also, again, not being a film scholar, and knowing that I have a lot of holes in my, you know, knowledge of a film, I do feel that this is a very strong transitional film between the 50s and 60s. And it being shot in 59, at the very end of 59 in November in London, and then being released in the 60s, there is definitely some characteristics about this film that I found really interesting, because I do like a lot of 60s and 70s films, not that I don't like them, but the music really kind of takes me out of it. I think it's so over the top a lot of the times. It's a very much of a product of its time, that a lot of times that really takes me out of the story. Or they'll have those weird psychedelic like flashbacks, or like even not even flashbacks, like Point Blank, where there's just like they just have psychedelic fucking scenes for some reason, you know, those sorts of things that really kind of take me out of the film. And this one, I think, balanced unknowingly. I don't think it was like something that they had to even think about, because it was just, you know, that time, like things were changing a little, and it's a perfect balance of those two, you know, film languages, I think, of the 50s and the 60s, without either one of them being too much or overwrought, you know, in the film. And so I think that there is a very important respect that should go to this film because of that. At least in my mind, you know, with my limited knowledge in terms of that.
Definitely.
I found it to be super entertaining and interesting, kind of seeing that those sorts of things come in. And a lot, even like the, you know, again, the soundtrack, I really enjoyed the soundtrack, and it reminded me of that sort of like jazz kind of thing, like Pink Panther or things like that. And I don't know if it's the same composer or whatever it is, but, you know, whatever the style, just it really worked for me, and I thought it was interesting. All right, that's it though for me. Eight gins out of 10.
Yeah. And I give it 9.
And you give it 9. All right.
Hey, do you not think though, moving forward, only person that could play Peter Sellers realistically is Archer.
Oh, I mean, that.
That would be immense if he could play him in a film.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's such a chameleon.
Yeah.
I could totally. I mean, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I could see that, sure. Yeah.
Peter Sellers used to play, say, 3 characters in one film. I can completely see that happening.
Yeah. Oh, because you're bringing up the spy thing. I gotta watch. Yeah. I'll have to watch the spy. Okay.
You have to watch it.
Okay. Well, I had to find it. okay. I'll watch it, and I'll have a better assessment of that. But just knowing what Sasha has done. Sorry, Sasha. I'm gonna use my version of it, okay? It's Sasha Baron Cohen.
Right?
Just knowing the stuff that he's done, and he's such a chameleon, I have this feeling he can. And then seeing like interviews of him, and like that's him, and he's a completely different person. Like, I remember the first time I saw him in an interview, I'm like, that's who? What? Wait, what? That's the guy that plays the guy. What?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even connect it. Like, my brain just wouldn't have it. So, yeah, I think he could probably fucking do anything, which is a great place to be as an actor, right? So, yeah, but let me check out The Spy, and I'll be able to speak to that more. But, all right, there you have it, guys. We hope you enjoy your, what did we call it then? Midnight recovery drink?
Midnight recovery.
Yeah, while you check out Never Let Go. And tell us what you think. Leave some comments. I know this will be up on YouTube at some point. But, you know, if you guys are listening to this on one of the podcast service, you know, jump over to YouTube, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think of Never Let Go. And let us know if you tried out the Midnight Recovery. I'm excited about this one. But yeah, so 9 gins out of 10 from Carly, and 8 out of 10 from me. And we will see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
He's looking at you, kid.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Speakeasy Noircast. Make sure to visit our website, resurrectionfilms.net, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcast apps, so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like the show, you might want to check out our book, The Dark Side of Acting Up and The Dark Side of Acting Up Volume 2, now available on Amazon. Or you can check out one of our films, also available on Amazon Prime. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the Speakeasy Noircast.